Here's a little something you may remember from the good old days.
I feel so old.
You're old.
You're so old.
I'm so old.
So old.
We're so old.
You're old.
You're old.
Well, here we go again. Training camp. 2017, which is what, 23, something like that now?
Whether we like it or not, yeah, it's here.
Here we go. Yep. And here we go again, because we just did this on Friday.
Right.
But that's what the schedule is going to be from now on, and that is senior moments to start your week, senior moments to end your week, and what comes in between is up to you.
Exactly.
I'm not sure that's our responsibility. But if people need something, I guess they can follow us on Twitter.
We're here.
Yeah, and your story's there.
And
on Jaguars.com.
Yeah, and it's been slow because the off season, no player access, no practice. But starting Wednesday, this thing gets going, and Jaguars.com, you know, self promotion, pat on the back, the place to be.
Did I tell you I went to the dermatologist and he prescribed a hat for me, very similar to the one that you wear?
Hey, I'm a trendsetter.
I would say that you are. You've been 2 years ahead of it. Do people ever give you grief about that hat?
Because
I want to know what to expect when I go out onto the field on Thursday.
Pale-skinned people like ourselves,
we have an excuse.
Tend not to give anybody grief about hat wear.
Yeah, so, I'm not going to worry about it. I have to wear long sleeves, too. That's just getting old.
Sure.
That's what senior moments is all about, being here over long term.
And still being here, knock on wood.
Hey, this is sort of free form, so how about a little gratuitous self-promotion? Mm-hmm. Are you above that?
No. I'm all for it.
So I read your story about camp battles, and it was well written.
Oh, I appreciate that.
It was well edited, too.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that whoever's posting it will post it well.
Well.
But it brings to mind the fact that we are entering camp, and we've talked about some of the big, obvious storylines, mm-hmm. but not really talked about those battles. I mean, those player-against-player confrontations where, at the end of the day, you're looking at the tape, and who played well today? Who played better?
Well, and the reality is, and I think most people who follow the league get this, NFL camp battles, you can talk about competition all you want. 9 times out of 10, there's not really a battle. I mean, I get that Jalen Ramsey has to come in and play well and play well to be a starter, but you sort of know he's going to start.
Right.
And that's what most of them are, because they're either drafted or they've played at a high enough level where the coaches really aren't looking to replace Telvin Smith. You know, if something would happen, it would be a miracle and somebody would come out and just play absolutely fantastic maybe, but usually not. So the true camp battle, in the sense that you might have a lot of in high school football or maybe in college football, are rare. But you do have one this year, Brandon Albert and Cam Robinson, which is really, to me, the only one-on-one camp battle that's really about a guy either starting or not. Because on the other side, you've got Ngakoue and Fowler. But as I noted in the story, Ngakoue started last year, but played 700 snaps compared to Fowler's 590. So whoever doesn't start there is still going to play 550, 600 snaps, which is the mother load of the snaps, so it's fine. Albert and Robinson.
Does Robinson have to outplay Albert, or does Albert have to come out here and underplay? In other words, you know, fall short of expectations. How does the rookie beat the two-time Pro Bowl vet that they traded for?
Well, you know,
because I can't see that yet.
I can't either. And again, in this scenario, you hate to speak. This is one of those situations that can only be known if you get inside Tom, Dave, and Doug's mind. So it's hard to really say exactly what it is. But realistically, you traded for a two-time Pro Bowl left tackle. If he comes in and is playing at the level that you expect, and Tom Coughlin, when they signed him, remember, likes Brandon Albert, signed him for a reason, went after it, or not traded him for a reason, a run blocker, likes what he is, and has followed him enough through his career where he knows what he is. So I would think he would have to come in and underperform. You know, now, obviously, that would also tie hand-in-hand with Cam Robinson beating him out, which, again, I just don't think if Brandon Albert plays as Brandon Albert is or has played throughout his career, I think he's a left tackle for this team, and I think that they will find another place for Cam Robinson to start.
You know, the thing is, how much does Cam Robinson have to practice playing guard? He's never played the spot. He didn't at Alabama.
Right.
And he didn't, to the best of my knowledge, at any of the OTAs or in minicamp.
Not that I know.
Right? So I asked Chris Snee, Tom Coughlin's son-in-law, mm-hmm. who is a four-time All-Pro Ring of Honor New York Giant, you know, if this is a guy that you're going to play, I didn't even say Cam Robinson. I just said if a guy's going to go play from tackle to go to guard, does he need to practice it or can he just put his hand down?
Right.
Well, I mean, Chris said no. I mean, You got to practice it.
Right.
Right? You got to know what the assignments are. You got to practice it. Can he do it? Yeah, maybe. But you got to practice it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just – that was during OTAs. I just didn't get the sense that Robinson's even in the mix at guard.
Yeah.
Of course, hey, they could have a super secret sauce
right.
here that they plan to apply to this thing during training camp.
Maybe not. But
maybe he opens up training camp playing some guard too.
You draft a guy – in the second round with a left tackle on the roster. I mean, now they drafted him when Albert was holding out or whatever you call the OTA not being here. Whatever that is, he wasn't here.
Just not here.
But then all of a sudden you're drafting a guy with – if they go that route and don't start him, then you're basically drafting a guy to be a backup for a year. And that's a –
you used to call that developing a guy.
Yeah, and that's great. If you're drafting him in a position where you feel like you're strong. But with the guards being in such flux on this roster, and they do feel like they're in flux. I don't think A.J. Cann is guaranteed anything. The left guard position, Omame, you know, Brandon Linder, who I think is going to start at center. You got a lot of guys in the mix, but you don't have a lot of guys who have established themselves as four-year guys who you know are core players. Then you really have done what many people would have been shocked entering the offseason, which means you didn't address guard in the offseason. I would think they would have addressed guard in the offseason.
Well,
you follow me?
I do. No,
yeah,
I totally
yeah,
do.
Right.
And I, right now, think that Cam Robinson is one of your best five.
And that's the other thing. Is he just better enough athletically and skill set wise where you say, look, there might be a couple of flubs here early?
Right.
But this guy has to be on the field.
Well, we've talked. I mean, John Ogden came out from UCLA, was the third pick in the 1996 draft, third overall pick, and ended up starting inside at left guard his rookie season because a Pro Bowl tackle named Tony Jones, who was then traded to Denver, was sitting there for Baltimore. So for him, he didn't get in the starting lineup, didn't hurt him at all, played pretty well.
And that's a similar level, the Tony Jones type left tackle to what Brandon Albert is.
Right.
You know, a very solid Pro Bowl, at times very, very good player, which is what Brandon Albert's been. So
I wonder if they give him a legitimate shot to compete with Albert or if they move him to guard. Because you got to figure the kid's going to play both. He's going to work at both spots because you're going to need a backup to Albert, and he's obviously the left tackle of the future.
Right.
So he's going to have a real busy camp.
You would think. I mean, can Albert move? I mean, Albert's played guard in the past, started his career at guard. Could he move in and play guard? I just don't see that at this stage of his career. Now, again, they may have a master plan that we don't know about because I'm sure there are things going on down there that we don't know about right now because there's going to be some secretive-ism, whatever that word
is. Some.
So
clandestine.
Yeah, and that's fine. That's what this is supposed to be. But I just can't see Albert moving inside at this stage of his career. That would be an interesting story. It might happen, but that would be unusual, and it would certainly be well worth noting around the league.
How many of the 53 spots do you think you could pick today? How many jobs are
correctly
really open?
Or just
I know you can go right. 1 to 53.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that even a journalism major like you can count.
Usually 47, 48, you know, and as the process gets near, sometimes this question is tough because it's easy right now to sort of pick in a vacuum. And then the reality, once you hit that real cut down to 53, oftentimes three or four of the last spots are, well, we need to have this because this guy's going to be out 2 weeks. But then once this guy's healthy, then we can move this guy back and we'll release it. So some of the last two or three are necessity moves. Need a receiver. We need a special teams guy because these two special teams guys are down. So the last four or five spots on the roster are always fluid. That includes making the 53 on that date. But you get very close. I think the decisions this year are, do you keep five receivers or six? Are you really going to keep four running backs? Are you going to keep Corey Grant? Is he good enough on special teams? Do you keep Rashad Green? There's guys like that.
Well, and that's where some of the intrigue comes in, because if D.D. Westbrook can return punts and kickoffs, how does Corey Grant stay on in a year that they're keeping the fullback? I mean,
and that's where if Westbrook can do both of those things, I think
Marquise Lee's
got a chance to be involved on kickoffs still. Because, again, one thing about this year, it was made clear in the offseason, Marone their philosophy is not going to be, well, let's keep a guy off special teams just to keep him healthy because he's playing another spot. If you can help him on special teams, you're probably going to play special teams. So Marquise Lee loves returning kicks, likes doing it.
Did well in Houston last year.
He's going to get I always just close my eyes and think of the speed that he showed on that 100-yard kickoff return where it's like he's gliding and he's in his fourth gear. There's one more gear there and he's not even moving very fast, but he's going fast. You know, I would think he'd be a factor on special teams as well. So special teams will play a big part in that final 5-6 spots.
Let's just randomly throw a couple things at you. Defensive line. I mean, you figure they're going to keep, well, they're certainly keeping 8. You know, they could keep 9 or even 10, depending on what they want to do.
10 is probably closer to the number.
Right.
Yeah.
So the intriguing battle's there. I mean, not for starting jobs, obviously, but for one of those 9 spots, 10 spots.
Right. I think Bennett and Day is one because Jones is on the team. Interesting, you know, Stephon Charles is an interesting guy in that mix.
Big, strong guy.
Big, strong guy, was out a lot during OTAs and was out for injury reasons. I'm not sure what it was. I kind of envisioned him as maybe that backup nose. There's also a school of thought, do you necessarily have to have a backup nose in the league anymore? They don't really play all 3 downs. You can get by without a backup nose or slide somebody else over there to do it. I don't necessarily know that you have to have that spot. Bennett and Day. Interesting for them because you could look at it on paper and think it's going to be either or, but Day really flashed last year at times. And Bennett, if you talk to coaches after OTAs were over with, they liked him a lot after OTA. So do you figure out a way where you keep both because you just don't want to let guys go who you know are good football players? And that's always the dilemma.
One other spot. I don't know that I'm looking at it really intently, but they signed Barry Church the year before Gibson. This kid, James Sample, big kid. You look at him, that's a safety right there. Hadn't been able to stay healthy. And I'm interested to see if he gets a good long look, if he can stay healthy, because, boy, the few times that we've seen him in his career, we've said, wow, he might have something.
Well, he realistically has to be a guy that they're looking at now going, all right, well, if he can do it, great. You got to think the first injury, the first time of unavailability, there does come a point where as much as you like a guy where first, second, third, fourth time they're not available, you just have to say, look, it doesn't look like it's working out. But he is a guy, when you do your 53 right now, it's tough to put him on it.
Yep.
Just because when you start doing numbers at other positions, 4 safeties, 2 backups, Sample's not in that 4 safety mix right now. At the same time, he does strike you as a guy where there's always guys after a couple weeks of camp that you start hearing people whisper about. Hey, looking pretty good. You know, he's a guy who could be that. And then it would come down to how you play in the preseason. All the guys who aren't penciled in on your 53 have to do something to stand out to make their way on 53. It's not hard to envision Sample doing something to make himself stand out.
Physically gifted guy.
Right. Out of the guys who aren't on that 53, he would be at the top of the list of guys who could play their way onto the team. But I think he has to play his way onto the team.
All right. Let's wrap this up. Favorite camp memory?
Oh, man. I'm so old. Here at the Jags, you know,
it could be your time in the Colts.
Yeah. I've got to say the camp memory, the camp that stands out will always be 95.
Yeah, Stevens Point.
It was my first one. I didn't realize at the time how unusual it was, meaning it was the last camp of its kind really in the NFL, or the last year for that, because, you know, Tom had him report so early. Remember, we were there up there 6 weeks.
Yeah, right after the 4th of July.
Never have anything close to that. I mean, it's so different now with the, first of all, the rules, obviously, you can't have 2-a-days.
Right.
But after that, they really reduced, even starting then, how long you could be there. So you'll never have a time where you're away like that, where, and the stories, I didn't realize at the time how different covering an expansion team was compared to covering a team that's not an expansion team, because you had all these guys who you were getting to know. I didn't realize at the time how what getting cut, you know, I had covered college. I had covered high schools. But you can get to know players on that level. So you, that year, I remember getting to know Pookie Floyd. Different guys. Scott Sisson, who got cut for Mike Hollis. You had covered all these guys in the expansion stuff. And because you were with the newspaper, and it was very much a getting to know the Jaguars year. So you did stories on the lower guys who might not make the team. And as much as training camp, I can remember standing outside Everbank Field on cut day and seeing Pookie Floyd walk out with his cardboard box and seeing different guys walk out. And suddenly I realized, whoa, this is the NFL. These guys now aren't in Jacksonville. As much as it was a good-hearted story for five months, now it's over. And so it's probably Steven's point for many, many reasons like that. Walking, being over at the acute care center, wherever it was that Tony was getting his
MRI on his knee.
Yeah, he hurt his knee that year.
Yeah.
I forget where it was, but I can remember standing outside with our photographer at the TU for 3 hours waiting for him to come out because that was the only story.
Absolutely. You know? Chris Mortensen's reporting
right
on it, sure.
And so just different things like that, seeing Tom come out on the practice field before the start of the first practice, seeing Desmond in the ice up to his waist, and just stuff like that that you never forget your first one.
There's so many, and most of them are from Steven's point for me. The day that Desmond walked out in the afternoon in shorts and a T-shirt, and Tom said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Oh, Veterans Day off." There's no Veterans Day off. Get back in and put your clothes on, right? And now Howard's like, "What?" And he has to walk back in and change his clothes and come out to practice. He thought, third day of practice, he was only going once.
Right.
There was the Saturday practice on the alternate practice field where the sky went from being bright and sunny to dark night. Yep. And it was like something out of a Lord of the Rings movie. How the lightning was falling out of the sky.
On a negative note, you never forget Leon Brown getting hurt up there.
Hurt his ankle.
I mean, one of the most brutal football injuries I've ever seen. And where he had players walking away because they didn't want to look at it.
And he was probably a Gonzalo Floyd, Pookie Floyd kind of guy that was a training camp guy, was going to be a nice story, but it was totally
I had covered Leon and Paxton when he was in high school.
So you knew him.
And a great kid, and I enjoyed covering him at the time and sort of knew him a little bit here at the Jags. But, all sorts of memories there that you can never repeat an expansion year like that because there's so many – expansion's different because you got so many guys coming in from other areas. You have so many players on the roster who know that even veterans know they're probably getting one of their last chance. And it's all coming together, comes together fast, and it's gone. And it's just an amazing thing to have covered.
And it was. I mean, it goes down as one of my favorite moments in Jaguars history. But the last one I'll share is Mike Golic, who has gone on to fame with ESPN, radio, and television. He owns the video stores back in Orlando and wanted to get into broadcasting. So he came up. Jags hired him to do the preseason games. And so he spent quite a bit of time with us in Steven Point that summer.
I remember.
I had the only room on the floor that had air conditioning in the dorm. So every night we'd be over at the, what was the little bar?
I have no idea what you're
Penalty box.
Yeah.
The penalty box. Oh, yes, you do.
Never went there.
Yeah. Line and Kugels. Yeah. Strike a bell. Anywhere. and Golic would come home, and he would haul his mattress down and throw it on the floor and pull me off my bed, jump on my bed. I'd sleep on his mattress on my floor in the air conditioning. It got to the point a weekend, I just slept on the floor.
Right.
I wanted to go to sleep.
And I was staying 15 miles outside of town in the TU's house. So
nobody was threatening your comfort
air conditioning, but
and
was,
health every night.
No. Yeah.
Well, those are the things that you go through when you're a young reporter covering camp. And now we're old. And here we are.
Senior
telling
moments.
Stories. Senior moments. We'll be back on Friday, folks. Hey, we got a logo, by the way. Check it out when it goes up on the web in a matter of hours. Thanks to a senior, Joe Fortunato, gray hair and all, for producing this motley podcast. Have a good one, everyone.